Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast.
Hello, fellow gamer. Welcome to episode 122 of Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker, and on this show, we discuss the craft and art of game mastering. I've been running RPGs for over 25 years now, and I've learned some lessons along the way. I also share wisdom from guest GMs on the show, as well as from listener GMs like you. In this episode, I'll review the Tome of Beasts monster book for D&D 5th edition by Kobold Press. So it's really great to be back for another episode of the show. I'm really excited to do this show today. Things have been crazy busy here at Starwalker Studios. As some of you probably already know, I am moving in a couple weeks now. So for those of you keeping score, yes, I have been moving a lot in the last few years, but hopefully this is it for a long time, hopefully. But that's keeping me really busy, and I'm going to try very hard to get the rest of the episodes out for September. And once we get into October, I should be in the new studio and rocking and rolling again. So I've really been looking forward to talking about the Tome of Beasts on the show. The Tome of Beasts is by Kobold Press, and you may recognize Kobold Press because they publish the Tyranny of Dragons adventure path or campaign, whatever you want to call it, that was the first published campaign for 5th edition, which consisted of Rise of Tiamat and Horde of the Dragon Queen. So Kobold Press actually kickstarted this book, and I did not get on board the Kickstarter, but I was very interested in it because one thing that I think 5th edition is sorely lacking is monsters. We have only one monster manual for the game, and we need more monsters. You always need more monsters. You can never have too many monsters, I don't think, as long as they're good monsters. So I was really excited about this project because it's going to be another huge monster book. And since it's by Kobold Press and not by, I almost said TSR, and not by Wizards of the Coast, I figured we'd see some different stuff than we've seen in D&D in the past. And I was not disappointed. And another product that was part of this is the Book of Lairs. And I'll be talking about the Book of Lairs in a future episode of the show. So that's kind of a companion product to the Book of Beasts or the Tome of Beasts. The Tome of Beasts is a monster manual, simply that. The Book of Lairs gives you monster lairs populated with monsters. And each of these is its own little adventure that you can run. And that's super cool too. So today I'm going to be reviewing the Tome of Beasts, pretty much going to talk about Tome of Beasts the whole show, not going to do any world building stuff, take a break from that this week. I do want to tell you though, I put up a post on the Google Plus community for Game Master's Journey asking for just questions about Primordia. And I'll have a link to that post in the show notes for this episode at starwalkerstudios.com. But just looking for kind of quick fire questions about Primordia that I can use for future world building episodes. So if you're digging the world building stuff and going by my metrics, the majority of you are really into the world building episodes. Those are by far the most downloaded episodes of the show. So if that's you, if you're into that stuff and you have some things that you've wondered about Primordia, or some areas maybe you'd like to see me focus on in a future world building segment or episode, then head on over to that post and let me know your questions.
This is Matthew Colville, and you're listening to Game Master's Journey.
I want to give a quick shout out to the patrons of Starwalker Studios. The support of the patrons makes this show possible. If you enjoy Game Master's Journey and you'd like to give a little back, becoming a patron is a great way to do so. Patrons get some cool perks like game material that I make for Primordia and access to a special monthly podcast I produce just for the patrons. I'd also like to give a huge shout out and thank you to my tier four patron, Mr. Steve Strickland. Let's hear it for Steve.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Steve.
Yes.
You're the man.
Thanks so much, Steve, and thank you to all the patrons. You can find out more about becoming a patron by clicking on the Patreon button at the top of the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. All right, so today I'm talking about Tome of Beasts by Kobold Press. And starting out with just the physical things, the hardcover of the book is $49.99 is the cover price. It's listed for $44.99 on Amazon, but it's currently still showing for pre-order. So I'll put a link to it on Amazon in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. It looks like it is going to be available on Amazon, and you will save at least $5 once it is available on Amazon, but it's not there yet. Probably will be cheaper than $45. I've seen that a lot with books on Amazon. The pre-order price is often more than the actual prices once it's out. So because you can't get it on Amazon, I'll also have a link to the book on Kobold Press's store on their website. And of course, you might be able to pick this up at your friendly local game store. And if you're going to pay full price for it, you might as well. The book has 429 pages. And also, as a companion product to this, Kobold Press has released a set of pawns for the book that are $34.99 on their website. And those are just the little paperboard illustrations of the monsters that you can put on little stands and use for miniatures, if you're into that kind of thing. The book is by Chris Harris, Rodrigo Garcia Carmona, Dan Dillon, Wolfgang Bauer, and Steve Winter. And continuing on with just some of the physical stuff here, the binding seems solid. Of course, I don't know. It's a brand new book. You never know. So, you know, who knows how well this binding will hold up over time. But just paging through the book, the binding seems solid. It doesn't seem super cheap. So hopefully it'll hold up well. The paper is not as quite of high quality as what you're used to in the official D&D books. The paper isn't glossy like that. So if you have seen, or maybe you have, the Tyranny of Dragons books, Rise of Tiamat and Horde of the Dragon Queen, it's the same paper as in those books, or very similar. I actually kind of prefer this paper because since it's not glossy, there's no glare. And I find with, you know, the DMG and the Player's Handbook and the Monster Manual, you know, there's often glare on the pages from overhead lights, and you have to kind of, you know, tilt the page around to be able to read it, which is kind of a pain. Of course, the downside of the pages not being glossy is they're not quite as hardy. So if you splash something on your book or something, it's definitely going to do a lot more damage to these pages than it would your Monster Manual pages. The book is in full color, and it's a very nice looking book. Look good on your bookshelf. So as far as how this book is laid out, it's laid out pretty well, very similar to the Monster Manual as far as how things are laid out. The stat blocks are laid out in the same way. So pretty easy to navigate as far as that goes. I do think that the layout breaks down a little bit in the villains and NPC section, as some of the entries will begin in the middle of a page and then continue on to the next page, and sometimes not even onto a facing page. So you have to flip pages just to read one entry, which definitely is not ideal. But what are you going to do? It's either that or have a bunch of empty space, right? One thing I really don't like, though, about the layout of this book is how sometimes the stat blocks will be broken between two columns on a page. And a lot of times it wasn't necessary. They could have just changed things around a little bit and kept that stat block on one column, but they didn't. And that's just kind of I don't know, a personal thing of mine, it just doesn't look as nice, and it's not quite as user-friendly during play, you know, when you have your stat block divided up like that. Unfortunately, there is no index for the book. Indexes can be really helpful. You might think at first, why do you need an index for the monster manual? But they can be really helpful when you're trying to find monsters like demons or dragons or other things like that, where you have multiple entries under one main entry. So like you have a demon section with multiple demons. And so you can't just look up Pit Fiend in the P, which I know that's not in here, but as an example, because it's under D for demons. So with things like that, it's, you know, and this book claims to have over 400 monsters. So it's really nice to have an index so you can look up the monster you want in the index and find where it is in the book. And this, unfortunately, does not have that. Also, an index would be helpful with monsters like the Rum Gremlin. Would you look for Rum Gremlin in the R's or the G's? If you guessed R, you'd be wrong, which is what I would guess. I would assume it would be the first word would be where, but it's not. So again, an index would have helped with things like that. Also, in the back of the book, there is a monsters by CR table, but there is no monster by type table, and there are no monster by terrain tables, nor are there any random encounter tables. So someone from Kobold, I think it was Wolfgang Bauer, did say on their Google Plus community that they were considering putting out a monster by type table as a PDF. Hopefully that would be a free download for everyone. But those would be really useful to have. Now, side note, the monster manual doesn't have those either. The monster by CR table is actually in the Dungeon Master's Guide, if I remember correctly. And the monster by type, and actually, I think the monster by terrain table is in the DMG too. But the monster by type table is a PDF you have to get from Wizards. So I actually have PDFs for the monster by CR, monster by type, and monster by terrain tables from Wizards. They have PDFs of all those, I believe. You know, definitely not a deal breaker. We didn't have all those things in the monster manual either, but would have been really nice to have those. You know, I design adventures all the time, and I tell you what, I use the monster by type table all the time. Like, I'm like, oh, I want some fae for my adventure. What are all the fae I have access to? And things like that. They're very useful to have. Obviously, random encounter tables are really nice to have, or at the very least, monster by environment tables are really nice to have to make your own random tables. But unfortunately, we don't have any of that. Moving on to the writing and editing of the book. The writing is actually really good for this, for the most part. Wolfgang Bauer gives a great introduction to the book that reminds us why monsters are so important in D&D. And really got me excited to look through these monsters and try them out in my game. I really like also that each monster has a written out description. This is something that is sorely lacking in the official monster manual for D&D. Some of these descriptions are better than others, but they're all at least decent. Although I will say that the written description often does not agree with the illustration that you're given, which is unfortunate. Another editing pass with the book may have caught these mistakes, and that's going to be a common theme through this review, I think. One of my biggest criticisms of the book is it needed at least another editing pass. There are a lot of editing oversights in this book that... really more than I would like to see in a professionally produced product like this. So these written descriptions are really helpful in running the game. And I think at least as a GM running the game in session, the written descriptions a lot of times can be even more helpful than an illustration, because you may not want to show your players an illustration because maybe you don't want them to see the rest of the page and see what the monster is called. Maybe you're concerned, especially if you're talking the monster manual, that they're going to recognize the illustration and instantly know what the monster is. It's a little less engaging to just show a picture than to give a good description. So at least me personally, a lot of times I don't like to show the illustration to the players. And I mean, let's face it, a lot of times the illustrations just aren't very good. Unfortunately, there are a lot of piss poor illustrations in the Monster Manual, which is unfortunate. So for all those reasons, you know, sometimes you may not want to show the illustration to the players. So it's really nice to have some kind of written description that you can either read or paraphrase. It's especially nice when these are well written, so you can just read them out loud. And again, the Monster Manual doesn't have this, and it's like just this glaring, obvious oversight. It's like, what were you thinking, Wizards? So I was really glad to see that in here. Now, again, you know, some of these descriptions are much, much better than others. Some of them are really good and you're going to want to use them. Some of them are not so good and you're not going to want to use them. But at least there's something there to jump off from. Now, I do wish some of the descriptions were a little more detailed and visual. Sometimes they're kind of abstract, and instead of telling you exactly what you see and hear and smell, they get a little abstract sometimes. But it's a lot better than nothing, which is what we have in the Monster Manual. And again, it is unfortunate that so often the written description does not agree with the illustration that is staring you in the face. So this can happen for various reasons, you know. Maybe the description was made before the art was commissioned, or maybe whoever wrote the description hadn't seen the art or whatever. But again, this is something that an editor should have caught and been like, hey, this description is totally different than the art. We should probably pick one. So that's unfortunate and does kind of make the professionalism of this book take a hit. But I guess, you know, trying to find the silver lining here, I guess as a DM, if you have time to look at it, you know, before you're in the moment, you know, maybe you can pick the one that you like better. So maybe this particular monster, the art isn't very good, so you're going to go with the written description. Or maybe on this other monster, the written description isn't very good, so you're going to go with the art. So, yeah, I guess that's one thing you could do. Unfortunately, as I already mentioned, there are quite a few more typing and grammar errors than I would like to see in a finished product like this. This book really, really would have benefited from another editing pass or two. For the most part, it doesn't make the meanings unclear. For the most part, when there are errors like this, you can still figure out what they're trying to say. But it does make me feel sorry for any non-native English speakers that are using this book, because, you know, you're going to have more problems with this stuff than a native English speaker will. So that's really unfortunate. A lot of the monsters have really bizarre names. Now, this may bother some people more than others. Personally, I'm not a fan of this. Good luck pronouncing some of these names for your players. Also helps it, makes it hard to remember the thing, right? Like, it's really easy to remember centaur or cyclops or werewolf, you know, oh, I want to use a werewolf. But some of these names just look like a random association of consonants, vowels, and apostrophes. So it doesn't really stick in your head when you don't even know what this word is or how to pronounce it. So these bizarre names are either going to fit in your world or they're not, right? You know, calling someone a werewolf or something a werewolf, you know, kind of, if you're playing D&D, that's probably going to work. But some of these names are so out there and so just not English sounding that it's either going to fit in your world really well or it's not going to fit at all. I suspect that some of these names may be coming from various mythologies or whatever, which, you know, can be really problematic, you know, pulling words and names out of a discrete culture to use in an RPG like this, unless you're making a setting that's based on that culture. A lot of times it's just not going to fit. It feels like a square peg in a round hole. So yeah, you know, not a deal breaker for me, but definitely there's a lot of these monsters that if I were going to use in my game, I would have to rename them because I'm not going to call them a jumble of consonants. So that's unfortunate too. And finally, I'll talk a little bit about the art in the book. The art really varies, much like the Monster Manual. You know, just like in the Monster Manual, some of the art is pretty good. Some of it's even very good. And then some of it, not so much. Some of the art is pretty terrible and everywhere in between. Unfortunately, Wizards themselves has set a pretty low bar for 5th edition when it comes to art. If you're one of those people that thinks 5th edition has awesome art, and I have heard people say this, that they think 5th edition has gorgeous art. And yeah, I'm sure if I went through the core books, I could find some pieces that would qualify as gorgeous art, but they're not the majority, and they're definitely not all the pieces that are in the books. But if you're one of those people and you think the 5th edition art is really good and you don't understand how it could be better, go check out art from the Theros block of Magic the Gathering, or really any Magic the Gathering cards. Just go to a website or wherever where you can see a bunch of Magic art and you'll see how good the art for 5th edition could be, and I would say should be, but isn't. So like that, this book, you know, pretty good spread of art quality from downright bad to pretty good, and some very evocative art, which is really what I look for in a monster manual and really any kind of RPG product. You know, what's important to me for the art is, first of all, that it doesn't look stupid. And second of all, that it evokes ideas, you know, oh, this monster looks cool. I can already think how I would use this in my game, that kind of thing. So again, you know, the art's hit and miss. You know, I'm not going to give you like a percentage of what percentage of the art is good compared to not, but it's hit or miss. You know, some of it's really good, some of it's really bad, and a lot of it's somewhere in the middle. However, the art is full color. All the illustrations are full color, which is really nice. And for the most part, gives you a good impression what the monster looks like, which is what's most important. Of course, again, if you're going to be using the written descriptions that are given, make sure that the written description agrees with what the art is showing you. And if not, decide which you're going to use, because they're not always the same. My favorite part of the show is when I hear from listener GMs like you. If you have feedback for the show, whether a comment on today's topic or an idea for a future topic, I'd love to hear from you. There are a lot of great ways to get a hold of me. You can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com, follow me on Twitter @LexStarwalker, and on Google plus LexStarwalker. Finally, you can visit the website starwalkerstudios.com to get links to my Patreon page, my YouTube channel, and more. You can also find a link to the Game Master's Journey Google Plus community at starwalkerstudios.com. The community is a great place to bounce ideas back and forth with other listener GMs. You can comment on the show episodes, share your own homebrew world, and ask questions of the many experienced GMs that are part of the community. You can find all this and more at starwalkerstudios.com. All right, getting back to the review. So I've covered some of the overarching stuff, you know, what the book looks like. Now let's talk about the monsters. I got to warn you, some of these monsters are really out there. Many of the monsters may not work in your particular setting, whatever that is. Now, the problem with having such bizarre monsters is what we find in this book is that they're not all going to fit into just any world. So the book claims on the back to have over 400 monsters. And if you're thinking you're going to buy this book and have 400 monsters that you can just drop into your game, you may be disappointed. Some of these monsters are really bizarre. Some of them are really out there. Some of them are very steeped in a particular mythology that may or may not fit well in your game and your setting. So I would really recommend that you look through a copy of this to get a feel for how many of the monsters you'd actually use in your game before you buy it. Hopefully you can go to your local game store and they have a copy you can flip through. I would definitely recommend doing that, because depending on what kind of a game you're running and what your setting is like, you might flip through this and be like, oh my God, I can use 90% of this stuff. Or you might flip through it and be like, I can only use about 10% of this stuff. And if you can only use 10% of it, then you'll have to decide, is it worth $50 for 40 monsters, basically. So, for example, talking about my world of Primordia, there are a lot of monsters in here, again, around 400, but unfortunately, many of them are not going to fit the flavor of Primordia. I don't know a lot about the Midgard setting, which is Kobold Press's setting, but it does seem like it's a very specific feeling setting and very different from a vanilla D&D world. So a lot of these, or maybe all of these monsters, are from or for the Midgard setting, so they may or may not fit in your setting. So Primordia, there's a lot of stuff that I just am not going to use, or if I do use it, I'm going to have to really reskin it a lot and change things about it a lot. So the monsters themselves are honestly a mixed bag. There are some monsters in here that are super cool and immediately inspired me with an idea or made me excited to find a way to use this monster in my game. There are a lot of monsters like that. And for me personally, I think that the monsters that are cool in here and the ones that I really like make it worth it for me. It makes it worth the price of entry to get this book. And, you know, there's a lot of monsters that are okay, you know, and, you know, I might need a very specific monster for a very specific thing. And chances are good that if it's not in the monster manual, I'll find something like it in the Tome of Beasts, which is super cool. So, you know, all those kind of, yeah, they're okay monsters, and the monsters that really excited me and really impressed me, to me, make the book worth it. But yeah, kind of a mixed bag. That there's a good spectrum of monsters as far as usability and as far as just how good they are. But fortunately, as I've said, there are a lot of monsters in this book, over 400 monsters. It's a lot. It's more than you're going to need for your campaign. So, you know, even if there are, for you personally, some monsters that you're like, oh my God, this is so stupid, I would never use this, there's 400 of them. So chances are really good you're going to find quite a few that you really like I did. All right, going on to kind of usability and balance of the book. Seems like there's a really good spread of CRs for monsters, all the way from 1/8 CR to CR 27. In fact, I would say there's a better spread and representation of the different CRs in here than there is in the monster manual. If you're like me and you've designed adventures for pretty much all levels of play in the game, then you've noticed that there are some levels of play where there's not a lot of monsters of that CR to choose from. So I noticed, you know, when you compare the CRs in the monster manual that are kind of light and you go look at that CR in the Tome of Beasts and you'll have lots of monsters there. So we finally have a good selection of monsters for all levels of play of the game if you're using the monster manual and the Tome of Beasts. And so I really want to applaud Kobold Press on that. They really picked up the ball that I think Wizards dropped with their monster manual and said, hey, there are definitely some levels of play that are underrepresented when it comes to monsters, so let's fill those out. And well done. Awesome job, guys. Good job picking up Wizard slack. As I kind of mentioned earlier, there are a lot of tie-ins to the Midgard setting. So a lot of the monsters will have a little sidebar that tells you about that monster specifically in the Midgard setting. However, most or all of these seem to be Midgard monsters anyway, so they all, I think, tie into that setting. So obviously, if you use Midgard as your setting, that's going to be very, very helpful to you. Much less so if you don't use Midgard, but sometimes those little sidebars can give you some ideas of different things you could do with the monsters or how you could work them into your setting, whatever that is. Now, I have to say, this is the part of the review that is weak for me because I have not had a chance to playtest any of these monsters. I'm in the middle of a move right now, and I'm not running any games right now. I don't have time, and I didn't want to, you know, put this review off another month to wait until I play tested it. So as far as the play testing, I don't know. Are these monsters balanced with the monsters in the monster manual? Can you just use them in your game with no worries? I don't know. I definitely I'm looking forward to playtesting this stuff, and I would definitely like to revisit Tome of Beasts on the show after I play tested some of the monsters and let you know what my experiences with them have been, which ones I used, how it went. Did they seem on par with what's in the monster manual? Did they seem weaker? Did they seem more powerful? I'm really interested to get that information. So any of you that have or are playtesting these monsters, let me know what your results have been and how, for you, they've stacked up with what's in the monster manual. So here are some of my favorite monsters. I thought I would really quickly just go over some of my favorites from the book. So one I got to talk about is the Doppelrat. And this is a CR2 monster. So this is a tiny rat. Looks like a normal rat, but it has this special ability called Arcane Doubling, which recharges after 10 minutes. So it can only use it once per encounter. A Doppelrat under duress creates clones of itself at the beginning of its turn. Each round for 4 rounds, the number of live Doppelrats quadruples but never exceeds 20. For example, when the Doppelrat triggers Arcane Doubling, one rat becomes 4. At the start of the rat's next turn, those 4 become 16, and at the start of the rat's third turn, those 16 become 20, the maximum allowed. If one of the duplicates was destroyed between the original Doppelrat's first and second turns, then the surviving 3 would become 12 and so on. So you see, every round the DM has to count how many rats there still are, multiply it by 4. Any surviving duplicates perish after a minute, so they don't stay around forever. And basically what's suggested is what happens is the first turn the original rat duplicates itself, and then the original runs away and leaves all these clones behind, which keep duplicating to fight the bad guys or whatever. Also has Doppling Disease. At the end of a Doppelrat encounter, every creature bitten by a Doppelrat or its duplicates must succeed on a Constitution saving throw or contract the degenerate cloning disease. Now, this is going to be one of these things you either love it or you hate it. This either is going to be awesome in your world or is totally not going to fit. And this is a good example of the kind of things that are in here. But it's cool. It's very creative. All right, so... So you contract this disease. During each long rest, the diseased creature grows and sloughs off a stillborn clone. The doppling process leaves the diseased creature incapacitated for 1 hour, unable to move, and barely able to speak. When the incapacitation wears off, the creature makes a Constitution saving throw. It recovers from the disease when it makes its second successful save. Humanoid clones created by the disease cannot be brought to life in any manner. So yeah, you're either going to think that's awesome or you're going to think that's gross or stupid, or it's either going to fit great or not so much. I think it's pretty cool. Again, I don't think I would ever use these in a game because I think it would be just a pain in the ass and not really worth it, but really cool concept. And a lot of the monsters in here that I really like, I could see basing an adventure on, you know, like kind of making it the set piece of a session. So they do have some guidelines for running Doppelrats. They say the hardest part of this monster is the sheer volume of attacks they generate. To model this, run them in groups of 4 for attack purposes and have those groups all use the same +5 to attack and do 1d4 damage. So, you know, there's a suggestion to kind of cut down on the die rolling, but you're still having to multiply by 4 every turn and you're adding and removing rats every turn. So it's a little fiddly. So some GMs may be okay with that and others may not. There are also quite a few demon lords and arch devils in here. I'm not going to go over any of those, but that's super cool and fun territory. And reminds me, something I did not mention earlier is there's a lot of beyond CR20 stuff in here. So if you're running a high-level campaign, this book gives you a lot more things to choose from for those higher-level parties than you have in the Monster Manual, which is super cool. Some more dragons in here, including the Void Dragon, which is CR14 as an adult and is a dragon that lives in the void of space. So again, you know, some campaigns, you would never use that. And then some campaigns, that might be just what you're looking for. Another favorite of mine is the Alehouse Drake. I think this is the favorite of a lot of people. And I like the drakes in here. And drakes are a type of
dragon. They're part of the dragon type. And they are like the dragons in Game of Thrones, the TV show. So they're dragons where instead of having four legs and two wings, they have two rear legs, and then their wings are part of their front legs. So exactly like the dragons in Game of Thrones, those are drakes in the Tome of Beasts, and they have quite a few different drakes. Some of them are really cool. The Elder Shadow Drake is super cool. The Star Drake is really cool. And then one that I really like is the Alehouse Drake, which is a CR 1/2 creature. And this is, you know, something that I really like to see in monster books is not just monsters for your character or your players to fight, but also monsters that can be allies or patrons or just make interesting NPCs that the PCs can encounter. And the Alehouse Drake is just such a monster. So here is the description. So I mentioned that every monster gets a description. So this plump little creature reclines with a dazed look in its eyes and the suggestion of a grin on its fang jaws. So that's a pretty, well, actually, it's not a very good description. It doesn't really tell you anything about how it looks, but it's better than nothing. And it's well written, so I wouldn't be embarrassed to read this to my players, but I would definitely want to add more details than that, because that does not really give you any idea what you're looking at. So this is a tiny dragon. They're scaled barflies. Alehouse drakes squat in busy bars, rowdy taverns, and bustling inns. A bane or savior to every bartender and innkeeper, alehouse drakes enjoy pushing patrons' emotions, driving crowds to ecstatic cheers or bloody bar fights. Alehouse drakes make their homes in cities and towns, though older drakes settle down in roadside coaching inns. In the former situations, they are often troublemakers or pranksters, but in the latter circumstances, they usually befriend the proprietor and help manage flared tempers and weepy drinkers in return for living space and a generous tab. So I really love this. I love they have this ability to manipulate emotions, and the younger dragons use it to cause trouble and stir up fights and create excitement to entertain themselves as they hang out in these inns. And so they're seen as a bane to the inn and not something the bartender wants around. But then as they get older and they settle down, then they pick a place where they want to stay. And now they use their ability to manipulate emotions to, you know, soothe people and keep fights from breaking out and keep everything calm and happy, and then become, you know, something that the bartender wants to hang around the inn. So I think that's really fun. And I think this is a great example of some of these monsters that they have that you can just build a session around and not necessarily just as adversaries, which I think is super cool. I mean, these guys have a 11 intelligence, so they're average human intelligence, you know, so you could use this as an NPC. They could be someone that's an ally of the player characters. They could be an enemy of the player characters. They could be a little of both. Maybe you don't know. Anything in between. Really cool stuff. Another section of the book that I really like is a section on Fae Lords and Ladies. One of my favorites is the Queen of Night and Magic, which is a CR 21 Fae Lady Sorceress Enchantress kind of creature. These are all really cool, all very powerful. So if you're like me and you want to have the Fae be a strong presence in your world and you want to have some uber powerful Fae in your world, there you go. And there are a lot of Fae in here, not just the Fae Lords and Ladies, but throughout the book. And I'd love to see if they make a table of monsters by type, I'd love to see how many Fae are in here. A lot more than what's in the Monster Manual. We have like 9 Fae in the Monster Manual. It's terrible. So very desperately needed. So I'm really happy to see more Fae. Another favorite of mine is the Rum Gremlin, which is a CR 1/2 creature that likes to hang out near the harbor and the docks and whatnot, and not only gets itself drunk a lot, but actually has an aura that intoxicates people around it. So again, that can be a fun creature just to put some mischief into the game. Lots of fun. Another favorite of mine is the Cote Bayoune. Just guessing how to pronounce that word. Don't know if someone made that up or if that's from a real world language somewhere. But yeah, that's a thing. No idea from the name, but it's a cat kind of creature. So the Cote Bayoune is a monstrosity. It's CR2, and it is a speaking monstrous cat that has been kind of used a lot by cruel fae. Thing I like about them is they are enemies of elves and blink dogs. So I love pulling in monsters that particularly dislike someone in the party. So, you know, if I have elves or half elves as player characters in my party, I'd probably be excited to use one of these cats. They can put people to sleep. They also have this interesting thing where they can recite poetry, and it actually works as a restoration spell. So these guys are neutral in alignment, so you could possibly make friends with one, especially at low level, if you need restoration magic and you don't have a cleric or you guys aren't high enough level to cast it yourself yet, which is pretty cool. And again, I love monsters that aren't just, oh, it's evil and kills everything in sight. I like monsters that can be either an ally or an enemy, depending on the situation, depending on what the monster's out doing, and depending on how the player characters react to it. I really like that stuff. And then finally, an example of one of the fae that I really like in here is the Vile Barber. This is a great creature to use, I think, in a city or a large town, especially if you're doing like a city-based campaign, and it can often be challenging to come up with ways for the PCs to fight something that's not just another boring humanoid when you're stuck in a city. And so this is a creature you could use in a city. The Vile Barber is a chaotic evil fae, and they are CR2, and they're like really scary barbers that like to slit people's throats. And they can step through shadows. And yeah, this is one of the pieces of art I like in the game, or in the book, I should say. Pretty twisted. Reminds me of something from Changeling the Dreaming. Kind of reminds me of a cross between a Slua and a Red Cap from Changeling the Dreaming. But really cool. Really cool fae creature. This description is a pale, scrawny fellow clad in a black leather apron and slender ebon gloves grins from the shadows. A maw of needle-sharp teeth and the wicked straight razor at his side are a clear warning that his enemies should hasten their footsteps. So see, that's a great description that gives you some idea of what the thing looks like, unlike the description of the alehouse drake. So you can see how, you know, some of the descriptions are better than others, but every monster has some kind of description that you can read aloud to your players, which is super cool. All right, so there's some of them that I like, just flipping through some of my favorites, and I could have talked about twice as many more. These are not my only favorites out of the book. I just didn't want this to be a two-hour episode. So I will definitely do my best to revisit the Tome of Beasts on a future episode once I've been able to use some of these in my games and let you know how it goes. So bottom line, I always like to give a bottom line with these reviews. You know, what is the bottom line? What's my final opinion? What's my final recommendation about this book? There are a lot of monsters in this book. Tastes are going to vary from person to person, but I'd say it's very likely that you're going to find many monsters that you like in here, and probably you're going to find some that you don't. Again, I recommend that you find a physical copy of the book that you can sit down with and flip through it to get a feel for how much of this book am I going to use personally in my game to decide, is it worth the price for you to get it? Because everybody needs to make that decision for themselves. And the best way to do it is to be able to look through the book and get a feel for how much of this are you really going to use, how much of it just doesn't fit your world or your game. Unfortunately, when it comes to the most important thing about this book, which are you know, whether or not the monsters are mechanically balanced and appropriate for fifth edition, and do they mesh well with what we see in the monster manual, so you can just drop them in your game and not worry about it. The jury's still out on that. I really can't give you anything on that, unfortunately. Like I said before, balance in fifth edition seems as much art as it is science. So I'm not sure how possible that even is. And I don't really know how well this book did or didn't hit the mark. It looks pretty good for the most part to me, just, you know, on paper. I did see a few things that gave me pause, namely some monsters that seem maybe a little too powerful for their CR. But I don't know for sure. And the only way to know for sure is to use them in play and see how they go. So hopefully I will hear from some of you how different monsters have worked for you. And I'll have my own experiences so I can revisit this in the future. However, I will say, even if there are problems with the balance of the monsters, and again, I'm not saying that there are, I don't know, but even if there are, you've still got a great starting point. And I think a GM who's proficient with 5th edition should be able to adjust the monsters if needed. So if a particular monster is a little too powerful, you can adjust that yourself. For me, and I think for a lot of us, often the hard part in coming up with a monster to use in your adventure is just getting a good concept for what is the monster, what's it like, what's it look like, what's its kind of purpose in the game and in the world. You know, that's kind of the hard part. Once you have a concept, coming up with mechanics and all that stuff is, relatively speaking, easier, much easier. So even worst case scenario, if you can't use a lot of the monsters in the book for whatever reason, they don't fit your world, or they're overpowered, or they're underpowered, or whatever, you can still take concepts from these monsters in the Tome of Beasts and use them in some way. Maybe you don't like the way the monster looks, you don't like the art, it's too horror genre for your game, so you just use a different picture and you can give it the same mechanics, just it looks different, you know, reskin it. Or maybe if the problems with some of the mechanics, you just rebuild some of those mechanics or take some out or add things in. It's a lot easier to take a monster and change it and make it what you need it to be than it is to come up with something completely out of nothing. So even if there are monsters in this book that you can't use, you could probably get some use out of them. So bottom line, I'd say this book is definitely worth it if you think you're going to use a lot of the monsters or even some of them. And again, you'll have to make your own decision how many of those you need to use for the book to be worth it to you. Personally, I was a little disappointed with the relatively small percentage of monsters that I'll probably use in my game. I did hope that out of 400 monsters, there would be a lot more of them that I'm like, oh yeah, I can definitely use this, than there are. However, on the other hand, some of the ones that I probably will use are really cool and I'm really excited about them. And also, I like designing my own monsters. So having all these examples, even if a lot of them are not ones I'm going to use in my game, is really helpful to me, because I can use those as springboards to come up with my own ideas, or maybe I just reskin them, or maybe I just make some tweaks so that they fit in the Primordia better. So I find that very useful. So for me, the book is hands down worth it. I'm very happy with it, even though I was hoping to find more monsters in there that I could use in my game just out of the book. So as I usually say in these reviews, you're going to have to decide for yourself. And even more than usual, I suggest that you look through a copy of the book first before you buy it. I think for some GMs, this is going to be exactly what you're looking for. And you are going to be very happy to get this book. And it's going to be a game changer for you. And I think there could be other GMs that will be very disappointed and decide that they're going to take a pass on the book because maybe there's only a handful of monsters in here that they think they'd actually use. And there'll probably be a lot of GMs that are somewhere in between those extremes. A lot's going to depend on the flavor of your setting. You know, for instance, there's a lot of clockwork stuff in here. So if you're playing in a world like Eberron or another world where you have a lot of that kind of stuff, then you'll find that really useful. For me, all the clockwork stuff, it might as well just not even be there because I'm never going to use it because I don't want clockwork crap in Primordia. It's just not that kind of setting. There's a lot of constructs in here, and constructs are a part of the game that's kind of light. It's a monster type that I think is underrepresented in the monster manual. So, you know, that's something that's needed. We needed more constructs, but a lot of them just aren't going to work for Primordia. They're a little too Magitek for me. But if you're running an Eberron or you're running some other game that's more steampunky or Magitek or whatever, you know, you may love that stuff. And, you know, then all those constructs and all those clockworks and all that stuff is very useful to you. There's even a type of Warforged in there. So, yeah, it's just, it's really going to vary. There's just so many different things in this book, so many different types of monsters coming from different types of mythologies even, that I don't think there's a DM out there that's going to love everything that's in there. But there's probably not a DM out there that's going to hate everything that's in there either. So I think it's a good spread. It's a good spread of types and CRs and just, you know, genre even, from high fantasy to horror to Cthulhu type stuff, everything in between. So a lot of these monsters might be too silly or too bizarre for your game, but they might be just what another GM is looking for. So definitely check it out. So in the end, I think this book serves a very strong need in 5th edition, which is more monsters. Wizards of the Coast continues to crank out more adventure paths or published campaigns, whatever you want to call them, whether we want them or not. You know, they put out 4 so far. You know, you look at rule books for D&D, we've got the basic 3, Player's Handbook, DMG, Monster Manual. We've got Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, which is at best half a source book, you know, for the game. Like half of it's Forgotten Realms crap that, unless you're playing in the realms, is fairly useless. And even if you are playing in the realms, it's fairly useless unless you're completely new to the realms. And that's it. You know, we've got the Elemental Evil Player's Companion that's free online. We've got companions for, you know, the various other adventures they publish and, you know, monsters here and there and other adventures. But that's it. You know, how many monster books were there for 3rd edition? How many monsters were there for 2nd edition? Oh my God, my Monsters Compendium for 2nd edition, that binder was as thick as the binder was, if you know what I'm saying. It was like a 2 or 3 inch thick binder, and I had that thick of monsters in there. There were so many monsters in the game back in 2nd edition, and I know they made up a bunch of crap for 3rd edition. They probably made up more crap, literally crap, for 4th edition. So, you know, there's tons of monsters that Wizards could have put into Monster Manual that they could put in future Monster Manuals, but they haven't done it. We've gotten one Monster Manual for the game. That's it. You know, other than the basic 3 core books, we haven't gotten a whole lot of anything other than adventures for D&D. So, you know, I feel like the majority of DMs come up with their own stuff. I feel like it's a really small percentage of DMs out there that actually buy and run published adventures. I could be wrong. I must be, because that's all Wizards is doing, is these published adventures. So that there must be a huge demand for them, I guess. Because God knows Wizards does their market research, that's for sure. So anyway, strong need for more monsters in 5th edition. We just have the one monster book. And there are a lot of, quote, traditional monsters from D&D that are not in the Monster Manual. Think of all the Fae from previous editions that aren't in the game right now. Just to name one type of monster, not to mention, you know, the various outsiders and all this stuff. So, you know, we have this huge, rich plethora of monsters in the history of D&D. Very small portion of that is in the Monster Manual. And so we really needed more monsters for the game, and Tome of Beasts definitely serves that need. It seems like it's at least doubling the pool of monsters that you have to choose from now, which is super awesome. All right, well, that is going to wrap up episode 122 of Game Master's Journey. I hope you enjoyed this discussion of Tome of Beasts, and I hope that I've at least helped you decide whether or not you want to go to a physical store and check the thing out and see if it's right for you. I've really enjoyed reviewing the book. I've really enjoyed reading through the book, and I'm really looking forward to trying some of these monsters in my game. If you use any of them in your games, let me know how it goes. Let me know your opinions from in-play experience of whether or not the monsters are balanced with what we've seen from the Monster Manual. So that's going to do it for me this week. I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG, and I will be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. So until then, game on. Now let's go kill some monsters.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Stanko, Transboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.